Welcome to this deep dive, where we take complex topics and really try to pull out the crucial insights for you. Today, we're tackling a pretty significant legal case, Smith v. Avanti out of Colorado.
Right.
This case, while it really sharpens our understanding of housing discrimination, particularly concerning LGBTQ plus families.
Oh.
At its heart, it involves a landlord who refused to rent to a same-sex couple with children, and one of the kids is transgender.
Yeah, and what makes this deep dive so essential, I think, is how this case illuminates existing anti-discrimination protections. It gives us some very clear examples of what legally counts as discriminatory behavior in housing.
Exactly. It's not just theoretical.
That's right. This isn't just some isolated incident. You know, Smith v. Avanti really highlights the intersection of LGBTQ plus rights and the rights of families, specifically within the housing context.
And the evidence standard too, right?
Yes. Absolutely. It provides some really valuable clarity on the kind of evidence that can be decisive when these kinds of cases actually go to court.
Okay, so let's set the scene a bit. Paint a picture of what happened. We're talking about 2015. Tanya and Rachel Smith, they're a married same-sex couple. They have two kids.
And Rachel is transgender, which is an important detail here.
Right, a key detail. So they were looking for a place to rent in Gold Hill, Colorado, and they applied for a townhouse owned by a Deepika Avanti.
And it wasn't just like a blind application. They actually sent a family photo. They had conversations with Avanti about their family, their plans.
So Avanti knew exactly who they were applying.
Exactly. She had a very clear sense of the Smiths as a family. And then following these direct interactions, she rejected their application.
Via email.
Ah, the emails. That's crucial, isn't it?
Absolutely pivotal. It's this direct line of communication, these written emails, that become absolutely central to understanding how the court eventually ruled.
And you have to think about the real-world impact. I mean, the Smith actually ended up having to couch surf with relatives because they couldn't get this housing. Yeah, it just really brings home the tangible consequences, doesn't it?
Hmm.
Housing discrimination isn't abstract.
No, not at all.
It's a powerful reminder that housing isn't just, you know, bricks and mortar. It's about stability, security, community. And when that's denied because of discrimination, the ripple effects are significant.
So let's get into the why. Why did Avanti say no? This is where it gets really interesting and, frankly, pretty telling.
Yeah, the reasons she laid out in her emails are, well, they're explicit.
She specifically mentioned their unique relationship. That jumps out immediately.
Big red flag right there.
And she also brought up worries about potential noise from their children. And get this, she even said she consulted a psychic about whether to rent to them.
Yeah, the psychic part is unusual. But what's really striking is just how direct this evidence is. You know, often in discrimination cases, you're kind of reading between the lines, looking at indirect indicators.
Right, circumstantial stuff.
Exactly. But here, Avanti basically documented her discriminatory thought process in writing. The unique relationship comment strongly suggests discomfort with their same-sex marriage. And the psychic. Well, it shows her decision wasn't based on objective rental criteria, right?
Not even close. And it didn't stop there, did it? She made other comments, too.
No, it didn't. She also compared Rachel, who is a transgender woman, to a transvestite friend.
Which is just inaccurate, disrespectful, and clearly shows prejudice.
Absolutely. It misgenders Rachel and reveals a discriminatory bias. And she also said she wanted to maintain a low profile in the community as another reason.
A low profile? What does that even mean in this context?
Well, when you put it alongside the other comments, it really suggests she was concerned about the visibility of a same-sex couple, one with a transgender individual, living in her property. It points straight towards discriminatory motives, not legitimate business concerns. It just undermined her entire defense.
So, okay, this brings us right to the central legal question. Did Avanti's refusal violate the law, specifically the Fair Housing Act, the FHA, and the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act, CADA?
Exactly. That was the core issue. The Smiths argued yes on both counts. The FHA, sections 3604A and C, basically prohibits refusing to rent or making housing unavailable based on sex, familial status, race, religion, etc.
Standard protected classes.
Right. And CADA, the Colorado state law, actually goes further. It explicitly prohibits discrimination based on sexual orientation and transgender status on top of the federal categories. So CADA offered broader, clearer protection in this specific instance.
Now, the interpretation of sex under the federal FHA is really important here, isn't it? Because the FHA doesn't explicitly list sexual orientation or gender identity.
That's a crucial point. Courts have increasingly been looking at precedents from Title VII, the employment discrimination law.
Like Price Waterhouse.
Exactly like Price Waterhouse. That case established that discriminating based on gender stereotypes, how someone should act based on their sex, is a form of sex discrimination.
Okay.
So the logic extends to housing. If you're discriminating because someone doesn't conform to traditional gender roles or because of their gender identity, that can be considered sex discrimination under the FHA.
So in this case, Avanti's discomfort with their uniqueness
stemmed from stereotypes about who a woman should marry. The court saw that as falling under the umbrella of sex discrimination. It reflects this growing understanding that LGBTQ plus discrimination is often rooted in these gender and sex-based expectations.
And then CADA, the state law, made it even more explicit. No ambiguity there.
Absolutely none. CADA clearly and directly bans discrimination based on both sexual orientation and transgender status.
Mm.
So even if the FHA interpretation was still developing, CADA provided a very solid, unambiguous basis for the Smiths' claims.
So with all that legal groundwork, what did the court actually decide? It sounds like a strong case for the Smiths.
It was. The court granted summary judgment for the Smiths, which is significant.
Meaning no need for a full trial on liability?
Exactly. The judge found the facts and the law were so clear that discrimination did occur. There were basically three key holdings.
Okay, so let's break those down. First, sex discrimination under the FHA.
Right. The court said Avanti focusing on their uniqueness was rooted in stereotypes about gender roles and marriage, penalizing them for not conforming to heterosexual norms. That's sex discrimination under the FHA.
Makes sense. It's about those underlying assumptions. What was number two?
Second was familial status discrimination. Her worries about noise from the kids, her preference for tenants without children, that's a direct violation of protections for families under both the FHA and CATI. You can't discriminate just because someone has children?
Pretty straightforward. And the third finding?
Third was sexual orientation discrimination, specifically under CATA. Since CATA explicitly bans it, rejecting the Smiths because they were a same-sex couple was illegal. And her comments, the uniqueness, the comparison to the transvestite friend, that was clear evidence that their sexual orientation was a motivating factor.
And what about her low-profile excuse? Did the court buy that?
Not at all. The court basically dismissed it, especially given all the other discriminatory remarks and, you know, the psychic.
Right, the psych.
Taken together, it just painted a clear picture of discriminatory intent. The low-profile excuse just didn't hold water as a legitimate, non-discriminatory reason. The court saw right through it.
So zooming out a bit, what's the bigger picture here? Why is Smith v. Avanti a case people, especially maybe law students or anyone interested in social justice, should really understand?
Well, it serves as this really powerful, clear example of how direct evidence like Avanti's own emails can be incredibly influential in proving housing discrimination.
Yeah, you don't always get that smoking gun, so to speak.
Exactly. It often involves piecing things together. So when you have it documented like this, it carries huge weight. It removes a lot of that guesswork.
Definitely.
And maybe even more importantly, as we discussed, the case really reinforces the interpretation that sex discrimination under the FHA includes gender identity and gender stereotypes.
Yeah.
It brings the FHA more in line with, you know, how society's understanding has evolved and with state laws like CADA.
So what are the practical takeaways for landlords, for renters?
For landlords, the message is crystal clear. Your policies and practices must be inclusive. You can't rely on outdated stereotypes about who makes a good tenant. You need to understand and respect the diversity of families today.
And the settlement reinforces that, right? With the training requirement.
Absolutely. The settlement included monetary damages, sure, but also required Avanti to adopt a non-discrimination policy and undergo fair housing training. That underscores the importance of education in preventing this stuff.
And for renters.
For renters, this case provides more legal backing. A clear example of what illegal discrimination looks like. It empowers people to know their rights.
And it's so important to remember the intersectionality here, isn't it? It wasn't just one thing.
That's such a crucial point. The discrimination wasn't isolated. It was a mix of biases against their sexual orientation, against Rachel's gender identity, and against them being a family with kids. The court's ruling implicitly recognized all these overlapping grounds.
You know, we keep circling back to how explicit Avanti's comments were. Is that common, or was this kind of an outlier in terms of direct evidence?
Unfortunately, it's often more subtle. Discrimination can hide behind, coded language or policies that seem neutral but actually have a discriminatory impact.
Disparate impacts.
Exactly. Yeah. So Smith v. Avanti is somewhat unique in the sheer explicitness of the landlord's statements. It provided a really strong foundation for the court. It just highlights how important any written communication can be and how casual remarks can have serious legal weight if they reveal bias.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the main takeaway you want listeners to hold on to from Smith v. Avanti?
I think the core message is that housing is fundamental. It's about dignity. And the law, as this case clearly shows, can and will intervene when landlords discriminate based on sexual orientation, gender identity, familial status. It's a powerful example of anti-discrimination laws working to protect LGBTQ+ families and reinforcing that idea of equal access.
A really vital point, ensuring everyone gets a fair shot at a safe place to call home, no matter who they are or who their family is.
Absolutely. And it also shows that having the laws is one thing, but how they're interpreted and applied in the real world, reflecting our evolving understanding of identity, that's equally crucial.
So a final thought for everyone listening. Maybe consider how these evolving interpretations of civil rights laws, like we saw with sex under the FHA, continue to shape protections, not just in housing, but across the board. What might that mean for future discrimination cases? It's definitely something crucial to keep watching. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.